The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and in the galleries please rise for the prayer by Reverend Gawk and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
From the 25th Psalm we hear, He leads the humble in what is right and teaches the humble His ways. Holy God, move us to look at this world as You do, to see the potential of what love and compassion are capable of creating together, even with those who hate us. You soothe our fearful hearts with Your caring. Wash away now hatred and resentment within us that keeps us from working with those who see the world differently. Let Your truth stretch out our minds and souls so we are truly open to the potential that lays before us. In Your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schaff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 8th. You are now, Senator. Senator from the 12th. Senator from the 12th is present. Senator from the 22nd. Senator from the 22nd is present. Senator from Callaway is also present. A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 39th day, Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. Senator Kraus in the chair. Reverend Carl Gawk offered the following prayer. Righteousness will go before him.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as having been fully read. Any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator from Cole, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Cole has renewed his motion. Those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those to the contrary by saying no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion carries. Introduction of guests. Senator from 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Visiting here today, I have two introductions. The first one from my district is Mike Keelan from Kansas City, Missouri. He's a landscape architect. He has traveled down to the state capitol to advocate on behalf of his industry and educate us on landscape architecture. I'd ask the body to make him feel welcome.
Welcome to Missouri Senate. We're glad to have you with us today as a guest of the Senator from the 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. My second guest today is the doctor of the day, Dr. Betty Dries from UMKC. She is here visiting and serving in the role as doctor of the day. I know that the senator from Warrensburg may need to speak with her a little bit later, the way he was feeling yesterday. If anyone else is feeling under the weather, she is here to see you and hope she has a great day in the Capitol. Ask to make her feel welcome.
Doctor, we're very glad to have you here. Thank you for taking your time to be with us. Welcome to the Senate. Senator from the 4th.
Mr. President, introduction of special guest. Mr. President, to behind my back in the upper gallery on your left, we have a group of apprentice sheet metal workers that are here today visiting the Missouri Capitol to see how government functions, and I would ask that the body make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senate from the 4th please rise? Welcome to the Missouri Senate. Very glad to have you with us. Appreciate all of our guests. Senator from Webster.
Good morning, Mr. President. I have permission to introduce some special guests. Mr. President, on your left and on my right, we kind of have a West Plains today, I proudly say. West Plains people up here today. We have Ms. Carol Sylvie, her daughter Christina, and her granddaughter Camille. And seated next to her, we have Tim Bean and his wife Judy. Carol is the new, came up for the appointment today for Missouri State University Board of Governors, and Tim is up here today for the confirmation hearing on his position as State Fire Marshal. And both hearings went very well. The committee is very receptive and very respectful. Both great candidates, and would like for the body to make them feel welcome, please.
Would the guests of the Senator from Webster please rise? We're glad to have you here, and thank you very much for your willingness to serve the people of Missouri. Welcome to the Missouri Senate.
Made honorary page of the day.
Camille will be made honorary page for the day to serve without compensation. Other than that, that might be paid by the Senator from Webster. And we will have our doorman explain that role. Thank you very much, Senator from Webster. Further introductions. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole. The next order of business will be reports of standing committees. There's the Senator from Cole.
Feeling better, Bob.
Yep. This is on.
Without objection, the Senator will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
The order of business of reports of standing committees. Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources, to which was referred Senate Bill 528, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources, to which was referred Senate Bill 307, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources, to which was referred Senate Bill 373, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources, to which was referred Senate Bill 472, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Munslinger, Chairman.
Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Judiciary, Civil, and Criminal Jurisprudence has a report as well.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 50, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 128, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute number 2, hereto attached, do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred Senate Bill 448, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Dixon, Chairman.
Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Appropriations has a report.
Let's send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Appropriations, to which was referred Senate Bill 526, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Brown, Chairman.
Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Small Business Industry has two reports.
Okay, send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Small Business and Industry, to which was referred Senate Bill 392, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Small Business and Industry, to which was referred Senate Bill 404, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Libela, Chairman.
Senator from Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred Senate Bill 239, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attach do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred Senate Bill 355, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attach do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred Senate Bill 503, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred Senate Bill 399, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Schatz, Chairman.
Senator from Barrie.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Seniors, Families, and Children has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Seniors, Families, and Children's, to which was referred Senate Bill 501, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Sater, Chairman.
Senator from St. Genevieve.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your hardworking Education Committee has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred Senate Bill 478, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Romine, Chairman.
Senator from Callaway.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Professional Registration has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Professional Registration, to which was referred Senate Bill 490, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Respectfully submitted, Senator Riddle, Chairman.
Senator from Cole.
Sorry, Mr. President, the fire chief was bothering me. Mr. President, would you inquire from the secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I ask them to please be read.
Madam Secretary, if there are messages from the House, please read the message.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 87, entitled an act relating to the county special road tax. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 678, entitled an act relating to the designation of a memorial highway. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 200, entitled an act relating to county budgets. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 664, entitled an act relating to vehicle lighting equipment. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 281, entitled an act relating to nuisance abatement ordinances. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 258, entitled an act relating to the accountability of public funds. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 256, entitled an act relating to flashing lights used by motor vehicles and equipment with an emergency clause. Emergency clause defeated. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 569, entitled An Act Relating to the Show Me Compassionate Medical Education Act, with an emergency clause. Emergency clause defeated. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 811, entitled An Act Relating to Advanced Industrial Manufacturing Zones. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 631, entitled An Act Relating to School Bus Driver Medical Endorsements. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 568, entitled An Act Relating to Public Library Districts. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 304, entitled An Act Relating to School Employee Retirement Systems. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 245, entitled An Act Relating to the Taxation of Titled Personal Property. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 610, entitled An Act Relating to the Membership of Emergency Services Boards. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 701, entitled An Act Relating to the Designation of a Highway. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 183, entitled An Act Relating to Youth Violence Prevention Day, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from Lewis?
Senator from Lewis, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Morning, Senator.
Morning, Senator.
You know what today is?
I do.
Hurry before he leaves.
You know, Senator, I came in and I actually wished him happy birthday earlier. And he said he didn't want, I said, I wondered if his boss was going to say anything about it. And he says, he doesn't know.
Well, you know, Marines, they're kind of low key, especially a captain in the Marine Corps. I just thought we'd wish Adam a happy birthday. But the minute I inquired of you, he knew the gig was up. And he left, as covert operators of the Marine Corps do.
Very stealthy, aren't they?
All right. Well, yes. I just thought you'd join me in wishing Adam a happy birthday.
I do. I did wish him happy birthday earlier. And
you beat me.
Well, he said you didn't know, and he didn't want you to know. He didn't want me to tell you.
I did know. I just missed it on my calendar.
I want you to let him know that I did not tell you.
I will.
Okay.
I will. Drew told me. Drew Dampf.
Okay.
Used to work in my office and quit and left us.
Yeah.
Went back,
you know,
to the center from Andrew.
They shop around here. I don't know.
No, shops around. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator, and we all wish him a very happy birthday.
You bet.
Senator, President. Senator from Cole.
Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third reading, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
The order of business, the House bills on third reading, House Bill 95, Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay that bill on the informal calendar?
That bill will be laid on the formal calendar. House Bill 153, Senator from Butler.
Hello. There we go. Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that House Bill 153 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
The Senator from Butler has moved that House Bill 153 be taken up for third reading and final passage. Senator from Butler.
I now move the House Bill 153 be third read and finally passed.
All in favor of taking the House Bill 153 up for third reading, vote say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
President.
From Butler. House- Senator Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The Senator
Mr. President, has House Bill 153 is the expert witness tort reform legislation. We have heard this bill in this chamber's previous three sessions, and last year it was truly agreed to and passed, but was vetoed by the governor. Currently, Missouri uses what is known as the old...
Okay, let's re-clarify the message, Senator Butler, that your motion is that the House Bill 153 be taken up a third reading and final passage.
That's correct, Mr. President.
And many of the opinion, Chef Hill, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And you are on explanation. Explain the bills. Proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Sorry, I must have got in front of you there. House Bill 153 is the expert witness tort reform legislation. We have heard this bill the previous three sessions here in this chamber, and last year it was truly agreed to and finally passed, but was vetoed by the governor. Currently, Missouri uses what is known as the old standard that has been around since 1989, and because of U.S. Supreme Court case Daubert v. Merrill Dow in 1993, the courts modified the federal rules of evidence regarding the admissibility of expert testimony. Since the Daubert decision, 42 states have now codified the new standard into their state statutes. Missouri would become the 43rd state. The question House Bill 153 is answering is this. How do we know if an expert witness is truly an expert, and then if the information he or she testifies to be reliable? It is important to note adopting the Daubert standard would empower Missouri judges to act as gatekeepers by closely examining expert testimony that plaintiffs and defendants seek to present in court. Addressing admissibility of evidence prior to trial, while requiring a little initial investment of time, will help avoid fights at trial over expert evidence, wasting jury time with cases lacking scientific merit and needless litigation. The judge could decide to have a hearing to determine if a particular witness should be allowed to testify, or the judge could make that determination on his or her own. Ultimately, Mr. President, it is the judge's decision. Specifically, studies have found that under Daubert, plaintiffs are discouraged from filing weak cases, and courts dismiss early when they lack sufficient support, and parties are more apt to settle cases when expert testimony survives the Daubert scrutiny. We have now worked on this legislation for over 3 years, honoring the negotiations that have taken place over the years in this chamber and other chamber, including this year. This bill exempts all non-jury trials from Daubert, meaning the old current standard would still apply. There is one difference from the bill before us from the legislation this body passed last year. One difference is the House added on the floor an amendment to exempt all non-jury trials from the new Daubert standard. This amendment passed with 153 votes in the House. When the Senate passed the bill last year, most non-jury trials were exempted, but not all of them. For example, workman's comp was not exempted at that time. House Bill 153 passed the House recently by a vote of 106 to 51. Last year, the bill passed with only 85 votes. With the changes in discussions and negotiations this past year, the bill picked up another 21 votes in the House. In closing, Mr. President, by adopting the Daubert standard, Missouri would be requiring the courts to conduct a more in-depth analysis of the testimony and science being presented by witnesses who offer themselves up as an expert. The current statute is rudimentary and can allow junk science testimony to be admitted and then have the jury sort out the weight of the facts and opinions that are being presented to them. House Bill 153, by its passage and by signing into law, will make it the 43rd state, Missouri, the 43rd state, to adopt the Daubert standard, help the structure of the trial, and reduce error in courts. With that, Mr. President, I'd be willing to take any questions or try to answer whatever I can.
Further, does any senator desire to be heard on the bill, that is House Bill 153? The senator from the first, what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, yield?
I do.
I proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. Good morning.
Good morning.
You made the point that we've been working on this bill for 3 years now, and I will say I know in the past I've expressed concerns about aspects of the bill, but I have to acknowledge that the version that we were discussing last year I think was stronger than the version that we had the year before, and I think the version that's in front of us now is stronger than the version that we sent to the governor last year. You know, you and I have been serving in the Senate for the same period of time. We both came in here in 2013 was our first year, and you know, I kind of analogize the process that we've gone through on the expert witness bill to what we did on the medical malpractice cap bill, and that was, and it just so happened that was also a three-year process.
That's right.
I think a lot of folks on both sides would have been just as happy to get it over in one. But at the end of the day, we're left with a bill that I think probably strikes as good of a balance as we're ever going to strike if we go down this road in terms of trying to take advantage of the stronger standard for what it offers, where it can offer value, while at the same time minimizing the cost of that. And let me explain what I mean. As I think you're aware, I'm a litigator. I try cases. And my practice includes both cases pending in federal court, where we've had the Daubert standard for almost a quarter century at this point, as well as state court cases, which where we don't have the Daubert standard currently. So I've got a different expert witness standing standard depending on whether I'm in state or federal court. And at the beginning of a lawsuit, clients will understandably ask counsel to prepare a projected budget of how much they think it's going to take to either prosecute or defend the case, particularly when you're defending whether the person paying the bill is an insurance company or a business or sometimes both.
Right.
There is an expectation at the front end of the process of, look, what's it going to run me to get to trial? And the idea behind that is to try to have some accountability and some cost certainty. I mean, and there will sometimes be overruns. And there will sometimes be cases where, lo and behold, you get to trial for a whole lot less than you thought it was going to take.
Right.
It just depends. But I have to say that when I've got a case that's pending in federal court, there is a line item in the budget that I will submit to the client for expert witness motions, much as in state court cases there's a line item for motions in limine, which is how you address expert admissibility issues in state court. And there's also expert discovery in both budgets. But long story short, in the federal system, that budget is quite a bit higher, which is to say, to comply with the Daubert standard, you have to do things in the discovery process, in deposition, and in motion practice that right now you don't have to do in Missouri State Court. So one of my concerns with this bill has always been, I'm concerned that the Daubert standard, frankly, is more expensive to litigate. That can be a double-edged sword. There can be cases where that's not all bad,
right?
And I get that too. So I you know, this is one of those things that's not. This is an issue that's never been black or white for me. It's always been shades of gray in terms of striking the right balance. But Senator from the seventh,
I think he needs to be hammered today.
You know, I don't think he said it loudly enough to draw a gavel, but. Wouldn't be the first time he's been out of order in the last 24 hours, Senator.
Yeah, I know.
In any event. But my point is that it does cost more just because there's certain built-in discovery that you do for Daubert motions. And even though in state court, under our current state court standard, there will sometimes be very extensive written motions on the admissibility of expert testimony, it's just not as extensive as what's done in federal court. So It's one thing when we go to that added trouble to try to make sure that a jury doesn't get misled.
Now that's very important both sides, because I'm weighing
right.
the justice equally out.
That's right.
Because it could be negative for a defense or the plaintiff.
Well, that's right. No, and I got to tell you,
be the best salesperson.
Yeah. In federal court, I've seen situations where a plaintiff gets a defendant's expert stricken.
Right.
Absolutely. So. I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander on that. You're absolutely right. But the point is that in state court, where there is no jury, I would respectfully suggest that the added benefit of Daubert is at best attenuated, because we presume that a trial judge can tell junk science from real science. So application of the Daubert standard, which I think on the whole runs, it's more expensive to do to litigate under the Daubert standard.
You know what? In research that I did,
yep.
Don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
while we're on that subject,
sure.
The 42 states that we've looked at, I have not found anywhere that that's the case.
Well, and I'll say this: I think part of the reason that might be the case in other states is because, to your point, there are some lawsuits that just don't get brought in the absence of a Daubert standard. And it's a fair point to say, what does that tell you, right? I mean, if you don't think you can survive the Daubert standard, maybe this lawsuit doesn't need to get filed. I get that. But my point is, I think the benefits that the Daubert standard brings you in a bench trial are just not that great. And the costs, I think, in that case outweigh the benefits. One of the things that we've done in this version of the bill that we have not seen in the past is a wholesale acknowledgement of that. And so I think the amendment that the House added this year is very helpful in that regard. So we have had previous carve-outs in the past to deal with probate matters. Again,
right.
Those are bench trials.
Right.
There is language in this bill that we've had, maybe even since the first year, dealing with criminal cases.
Right.
And then the other...
That's something I worry about in criminal cases, too. Somebody getting...
Oh, yeah.
You know, somebody puts themselves up as an expert witness and, you know, Lord, get convicted of a crime that they actually didn't do because somebody was really good at selling that evidence.
Well, that's right. And you know, the other case, and unfortunately, it seems as though most of the examples come to us from the state of Texas, but, you know, there are cases where there's... psychological testimony,
right,
and particularly in death penalty cases, which I will just say has resulted in vigorous appellate litigation.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that protection is here. And the other instance that I think is within the bench trial carve out is family court. And you know, for folks that are fighting over custody or support. The process is expensive enough as it is. Occasionally, there will be expert witness
testimony.
And
that judge will handle numerous of those cases
already.
Yeah.
It's a volume business. Yeah. a lot of that going on, unfortunately.
That's right.
But the point is, I think, again, in the family court context, that's a situation where whatever you get out of the Daubert standard, I think, again, the costs outweigh the benefits. And I appreciate that the version of this bill that has come to the floor, I think, acknowledges that about as globally as it can.
I don't, you know, like you and I talked just a few minutes ago, I don't know anything else to negotiate on.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, at the end of the day, for jury trials in state court outside of the criminal context, you can't. I mean, you're either going to have the standard or you're not. You can't really, it's very hard to say that we ought to have the Daubert standard in personal injury cases but not commercial fraud cases or securities cases, financial cases. So, and I understand that, and I don't think I'm the only one who appreciates that. So, we've come a long way, and I am hopeful that this is an issue that we can put to rest in a form that might not be ideal to all concerned parties, but might be about as good as we're ever going to get.
I think it's a good bill now. I really do.
It is certainly, and I'll say this, it is certainly a stronger bill than what I've ever seen on the floor before. And I appreciate the work that you and many others have put in trying to get it that way.
I think in the manner you say strong, I think you mean fair, probably.
I think that is a fair observation, sir.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Cape, what reason do you rise?
President requests unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Without objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Up in the upper gallery, we have 31 7th through 12th graders from the Marquand Zion R6 school district, along with Glenn Berry and Sabrina Dublin, and I appreciate the Senate gave them a very warm welcome.
Will the guests of the Senate from Cape Girardeau please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate? Thank you for coming. Have a great day in the Capitol. Senators, proceed in your debate.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, Senator, I think I've asked all the questions I have for you at this time,
right,
so I thank you
much.
For yielding to my inquiry. Mr. President?
Senator from the First?
May I inquire the Senator from Buchanan?
Senator Buchanan, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, thank you for yielding to my inquiry. You know, this is one of those issues that both in the House and in the Senate has never been a purely partisan issue or anywhere close to it. There have been folks who are supportive and in opposition to this legislation on both sides of the aisle, I think it's fair to say.
I feel that the idea that you would allow the court to decide who gets to testify for you is not an American idea. It's taking away your ability to present your best case to the judge, so that when you seek justice, this bill is taking away your decision as to how best to seek justice for yourself. That's what this is doing.
You know, one of the points to that point, one of my assertions with respect to this legislation has always been that, as a civil litigator, if the party on the other side of the case is going to put up some knucklehead expert, in a way, that helps me.
Right.
Because I get to cross-examine that expert, and I got to tell you, Senator, I have seen some brutal expert cross-examinations in my years of practice.
The problem here isn't that we have insufficient experts; it's that we have insufficient juries, and they are susceptible to the junk science that these people put forth. I mean, you're not going to fix that problem. And by taking away our citizens' ability to have someone to present their case for them, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater here.
I do share your concern in that regard, Senator.
Right. It should be up to the other side to impeach my expert.
And trust me, as somebody on the other side, more than happy to do it, Senator.
Right.
It's been done.
But this is the Attorney Employment Act, is what this really is, because every attorney on the other side is going to have an economic incentive to try to impeach your witness using this bill. It's going to jack up the cost of litigation.
Well, and let me talk about that for a second. I share your concern for the cases that do come forward. I do think there is some truth to the notion that there will be cases that just simply won't be brought under the standard. But that being said, let me talk about for a minute why I think what you just said is absolutely correct. Because when an expert is tendered in federal court, as an attorney on the other side, I have a duty to my client to explore whatever angle there is in terms of limiting or excluding the testimony of that expert, because it's my client's strategic advantage, which is to say, if you and I have a case together and you put up some junk.
The floor leader is over there waving
at
the President.
Madam President, Madam it would appear President, as though...
The Madam President is not noticing...
No, she is not, Madam President.
The Madam President is not noticing the floor leader waving his white flag.
She is engaged in discussion with the floor with the Sergeant of Arms.
There she goes.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Cole, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam President. I apologize for interrupting my colleagues, but I would seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
I didn't know if you noticed, Madam President, I was doing the state jumping jack.
I did notice that.
To get your attention.
I was dealing with a very important issue.
You're very
with
busy.
Our Sergeant of Arms.
Madam President, you're very busy, I might add. Madam President, this morning I'm pleased to have with us to my right and your left, we have Jeremiah Rosenberg, Mark Miller, Sarah Jude, and Judy Granger. They're here with the United Cerebral Palsy Heartland Gibbs Center for Independence here in Jefferson City. They're here for Missouri Rights Day. A great group of people, and I'd ask the Senate to make these folks feel very welcome in our chamber this morning.
Please help welcome the senator, the guest of the senator from Cole. We are glad you're here today. Senator from Webster, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam President. Seek permission to introduce a special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, sitting on the right of you and on your right, I need to go back to their profession, I think. They come from the same profession that you previously served in. We have two teachers here from the Seymour School District. We have Debbie Cassing, and also Brenda Woods. We'd like for the body to make them feel welcome, please.
Please welcome the great teacher guest of the Senator from Welcome. Senator from Webster. All right. Senator from the First, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President. Senator, the point I was just making, let's just imagine you and I have a lawsuit where we're on opposite sides, and let's just further suppose that you endorse an expert witness who would not meet the Daubert standard. If I fail to file a Daubert motion, or if I file a Daubert motion and I miss a critical, obvious flaw in your expert's approach, and we go to trial, and you absolutely clobber me at trial, guess what the next lawsuit is going to be?
Against you.
It's going to be the malpractice claim against me for not litigating that Daubert motion or not litigating it to the best of my abilities. And for that reason, the presence of the Daubert standard almost dictates that counsel in the cases file Daubert motions. Among other reasons, because you might not disqualify the expert, you might limit their testimony, but I just would not want members of this body to vote this legislation forward under the misapprehension that somehow we're not going to be litigating Daubert motions constantly. We are. I mean, absolutely are.
Well, and the thing is, I think that every member of this body ought to consider what you just said, which is that if the other side, the attorney, doesn't go ahead and file the Daubert challenge, if they do get clobbered, they are going to be worried about the potential of malpractice, legal malpractice, and so they have this disincentive not to file
right.
The Daubert motion.
Well, and beyond that, yeah, look, there are a lot of cases where there simply aren't expert witnesses. There are a lot of cases where there's one expert on each side on a single issue. There are also cases where there are multiple issues on both sides of litigation. That's where you just have two parties, right? If you have three or four or five parties, it could be more. So, I mean, you can get into a situation where you are filing a half dozen Daubert motions and defending a half dozen Daubert motions. Now, the kind of case that warrants that extensive litigation is usually one that's in the seven figures in controversy, sometimes in the eight or nine figures in controversy. But the point remains, it is not an inexpensive proposition to go through this process. And in fairness, we deal with some of that expense now because we do seek to exclude expert witness testimony under the current state standard. It's just not the same as what we do in federal court. It's simply not. And the federal court practice is just much more extensive in that regard.
I looked at the list of witnesses for this bill, and of course the Missouri State Medical Association is listed
yes.
as a witness, and so I was talking to their lobbyist and basically was told, well, we're always for tort reform. Tort reform, good.
Yeah.
So if it's got the label of tort reform, it's like a knee-jerk reaction that you know, all of these medical providers are for tort reform.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be good, but in this case, it actually increases the cost of defending doctors because you're going to have your expert witness going to have to do a Daubert hearing on them.
There's going to be more
process. There's going to be a Daubert hearing, yeah. And then you've got to fly your expert witness in. You got to pay for their airfare, pay for multiple hours of their time at $500 an hour.
Sometimes more.
Or more. Yeah. You bring them in multiple hours. Then they have the hearing, and then they got to fly back, and that's all before trial.
Yeah.
Not only that, but you've got to pay your attorney. You've got to pay for the court reporter.
There's document discovery. There's deposition preparation. There's deposition time. It's not just the Daubert motion itself that's more expensive.
And if you hire a defense attorney, and the plaintiff has an expert witness, your defense attorney is going to tell you better do the Daubert hearing and try to knock him out.
At the very least, the defense attorney is going to engage in extensive discovery to discern whether there's a good faith basis to bring a Daubert motion. In some cases, there won't be. Again, I think most practitioners are going to err on the side of filing the motion in more cases than not. Senator, unfortunately, I need to step off the floor for just a few minutes. I have some constituents in who I need to visit with, but I wanted to go to you because I know that you share some of my concerns with the bill. Heard from the sponsor, wanted to hear from.
Well, do you have just a minute before you go?
I have like 60 seconds, Senator.
Okay. Well, I have an amendment that would only make the Daubert a paper process and not an actual hearing process. That would cut way down on the cost of it.
Senator, I have not seen your amendment.
I haven't distributed it.
Right,
yet.
So I'm going to withhold judgment until I have. I will say I think the bill in its current form may not technically require the hearing, and so I do want to be a little bit careful about how far down that road we go. But let me suggest this. I'm going to put my microphone down, terminate this inquiry. I need to go see some constituents. I'll be back very quickly, and if your amendment gets on in the time that I'm gone, then so be it. But my suspicion is that there will probably be some discussion.
More.
Yes. Thank you, Madam President.
Madam President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the bill? Senator?
Madam President.
Proceed. For what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 14th.
Senator from the 14th. Sergeant of Arms, I don't see the senator from the 14th. Please summon that senator. Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thanks, Senator, for taking my inquiry. You know, this seems to be falling out along partisan lines, but it really shouldn't be a partisan issue at all.
No, I agree. I was just looking at the list of folks that testified for and against the bill, and it pretty much looks like it's on partisan lines.
Well, the thing is, that this should be a liberty decision. This should be talking about how we all go to court to achieve justice for ourselves. And who gets to decide who is the best person to present your case for you? And if I choose an expert who isn't really an expert, it's a problem for me because the other side will impeach my expert.
Right.
And they'll say, instead of trying to convince the judge that my expert is no good, they'll convince the jury. That jury can weigh the evidence and decide the credibility of my expert. That's the way it is now, and that's the way it should always be.
Sure, because it's on you if you chose an expert that wasn't necessarily an expert.
Right. If I choose an expert who's not really expert, the other side will make fun of them to the jury. They'll go like, oh my gosh, I mean, they'll ask questions. It will become obvious that my expert is not really all that expert, and that their expert is more expert, and the jury will weigh that. But what we're doing here is we're giving that power to the judge instead of to the jury, and then the jury doesn't get to my best case, what I think
is my best. Right, and it's a jury of our peers. It's a, you know, that's who we should be trying to speak with.
Right, that's the first problem. The second problem is that what we're doing here is we're creating a process that attorneys will then have an economic incentive to use to have more billable hours. So we're going through the case. I'm going to court. I'm saying, okay, this, you know, I have this this expert. The other side will then, their attorney will say, well, we better do a Daubert hearing. Now all of a sudden, my attorney has to spend more time litigating that.
And mine.
And if I'm on the plaintiff's side, you know, my attorney is going to say, hey, you better do a Daubert hearing on them. And so what there is there's an economic incentive for all of the attorneys to do Daubert hearings on all of these experts because they get paid to do it.
Right. And in the end, who loses? You and I.
And then the third thing is, not only is there an economic incentive to do the Daubert hearing, but there's an economic disincentive not to do the Daubert hearing, and it works like this. It's that if I decide not to do the Daubert hearing and my side loses, my client will sue me for malpractice,
sure,
for not doing the Daubert hearing. Because, hey, if you had done the Daubert hearing, you might have been able to knock out that that expert on the other side. So, therefore, I'm going to sue you, you know, for legal malpractice. So that's the third thing. And they will then try to inoculate themselves against legal malpractice by doing more Daubert hearings. So the cost of my insurance, my medical malpractice in the case of doctors, goes up. The cost of my going to court to seek justice for myself goes up. And that's the problem with this bill, I mean, in a nutshell. And that's why I don't like this bill. And, you know, who's to say that the science that is accepted by the court is resolved? I mean, for example, it used to be that when you got an ulcer, you know what the treatment was? It was to drink milk and cream.
It was what?
To drink milk and cream.
Oh, wow. You could never get me to do that. I guess I'd just keep my ulcer. I don't like milk.
Yeah, when years and years ago, the standard treatment for having an ulcer was to drink milk and cream. Well, then after a while, you know, it turned out that they realized that the fat in the milk and cream caused you to make more acid in your stomach, making the ulcer worse. But if you had had an expert witness who came and said, "Oh no, no, if you had an expert witness that said, "It is not the standard to drink milk and cream, you know, because those patients get worse," they would have been thrown out by under this scenario, because the standard of care was to drink milk and cream.
Sure.
It turned out it was wrong.
And more harmful.
Right. And now, do you remember when it used to be that after you had a baby, you were supposed to stay in bed for a couple weeks?
Yeah, that was in my mother's day.
Right. Well, if we had had the Daubert standard there, and somebody had been sued because somebody got out of bed and, you know, fell and broke their leg or something, I don't know what, but they got out of bed and something bad happened. Well, if you had an expert to defend you and the expert said, "Listen, you don't really have to have mothers stay in bed for 2 weeks. Under the Daubert standard, why, the standard of care was that you got to have everybody stay in bed for 2 weeks. I mean, it was exactly the wrong thing to do. The same thing goes for heart attack. It used to be you had a heart attack, you had to stay in bed for weeks.
And rest.
Right? Now, no, that's not the right thing to do. And so what my point here is that standards, as we gain more scientific knowledge, we find out that some of the things that we do are wrong. And that some of the people that we used to think were incompetent as experts, they were right. And to encode and enshrine in our law that we're going to let the judge decide this stuff, this is not the right way to go, in my opinion.
No, I agree, Senator. Senator, do you mind if I take a minute and ask Madam President a question? 1 minute, it's your inquiry, but I have some special guests in the gallery.
I think you should do that.
Thank you. Madam President?
Senator from the 13th, for what purpose do you rise?
I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Madam President, on your right and my left in the upper gallery over here in the corner, you often hear me talk about some of the apprentices that come through our training schools and our unions here in the state of Missouri, and the sheet metal workers. One of their classes is here today visiting the Capitol and their state legislators, their first year apprentices, and I ask that the body make them feel welcome.
Will the guest of the Senator from the 13th please rise? And the body, please welcome these young apprentices and a very fine program.
President, my only problem is I don't see any young women among their group. Maybe next time.
Welcome to the Capitol. Senator Firm Buchanan, you may proceed.
Well,
Senator, for that.
No, that's okay. You know, this bill passed through the House. It's passed through the Senate multiple times. I myself don't think that it's right-minded. I myself think that it's going to be a net negative on the result of justice in our state. If you add up all of the justice that people are getting now, it's going to go down. It's not going to be a net positive. And it's going to raise the cost of going to court and getting that justice. And so that's a bad thing. And at least I have an idea about how to make it better. And one way of making it better would be simply to require that it be a paper process and that we don't have to fly in the expert for a court hearing.
It would certainly be cheaper, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would save money, and then that would at least make me feel better. And so I have this amendment to propose. What I want to do is I want to hand this sheet of paper to the handler of the bill. Would you give that to the senator there? Anyway, that's what I was going to do, but I thought I might do some other inquiring.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you for allowing me to inquire of you. Madam President?
Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
I would like to inquire of the senator from the 14th.
I do not see the senator from the 14th, Sergeant-at-Arms. Would you please? I do see the senator from the 14th. Senator from the 14th, and Senator from Buchanan has asked for an inquiry. Do you yield?
Yes, madam.
She does proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Are you paying attention to what's going on with this bill?
No.
Okay, this is the expert witness bill. Are you familiar with it?
I've heard about it.
Okay. Well, do you mind talking with me about it for a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I've been running around today in my investigatory work. We just came up with a clue in terms of the vast amount of toxic waste in residential areas. And so I'm trying to get a little bit more information on that, but it's causing me to have to go to multiple places. So I've gotten a couple of phone calls. My interns took a call, and they didn't know why someone asked where I was, and then my assistant called. So I guess it's you. But I am never going to go through that all over again because I came in here like three times. I did not know what the intent was. But go ahead.
Okay, well, this bill, basically what it is it says that if you go to court and you want to present your case, you know, to the court to try to seek justice for yourself, that you don't get necessarily to present the expert witness that you think would be the best for you. It's up to the judge to decide whether the judge thinks that your expert is good enough. And it's not your decision anymore. This is a big deal. You know, it should really be up to you to decide. So you could project this onto the many people that you're dealing with in your district regarding your toxic waste situation. You know that?
Yes.
Because, you know, if you have an expert, if those people decide to go to court and they find an expert that you believe would provide them with the best case, then the judge might say, well, you're not an expert enough in this area, and then they wouldn't get to present that. You know, it should always be that the other side is in charge of impeaching your witness, not the judge. You know, you go to court, and your expert stands up and gives you know, his or her opinion to the jury, then your opponent in the case stands up and tries to impeach the credibility of your expert.
Senator, can I just tell you what this sounds like? This sounds like the everyday life of an African-American woman.
Well, tell me how that works.
Really sad. There's inequity when it comes to gender. There's an inequity when it comes to race. There is an inequity when it comes to age. Every single thing that I've experienced being in this building for 17 years. I think I'm getting close to being a relative expert when it comes to toxic waste. I can tell you that. Some of the science stuff I don't know, but certainly when we're talking about people's lives and the ability or inability for them to get cancer, I basically am at the point where when someone turns 60 years old, I know exactly what's going to happen to them at this point because of where they live. So I've been doing these case studies and all the interviews, as I told you about. I just, as you were saying that, all I thought about is, you know, that's a day in the life of an African-American woman being judged for your intellect, being judged for everything. So it's nothing new to me. So, but in the context of what you're talking about, yes, it would be just terrible.
Well, this bill concerns me because if the attorney who is representing you says to you, we can do this Daubert hearing to try to discredit the witness of the person on the other side, they have an incentive to go ahead and convince you to allow them to do the Daubert hearing because they're going to have more billable hours. Doesn't that make sense?
Yes.
And so the attorneys on both sides are going to be saying, hey, we got expert witnesses here. We better do Daubert hearings just to make sure that these witnesses are of high quality, and that'll make our cases better. They're going to argue that, and they're going to get paid more billable hours by doing that. So they have an economic incentive to do more hearings. You see that? And when they do these hearings, they got to fly in the experts, and that's going to jack up the cost of litigating. If you have an expert that's going to say, yes, in my opinion, the other side wronged my client or my, you know, the person who asked me to testify, then you're going to have to pay their hourly rate to fly in from wherever that they come in from and to stay in a hotel maybe.
You start pricing out the person, the victim. It sounds like you start pricing out the victim if they're paying so much.
It's going to jack up the cost of you going to court to seek justice.
Yeah.
There's no need to have them come in.
Yeah, that is a practice that far too often occurs in a couple of places that I've seen. And you know, I have to... I'm not going to apologize, but I have to tell you that I am solely focused on one thing. Well, two things. The Russians and toxic waste in my district. So anything that's outside of that, it takes some time to re-familiarize myself with that. But as you're saying that, there is evidence in I could think of multiple articles that I have researched throughout the decades. I'm thinking the section that I'm looking up right now is in the 1970s and what people would say about radioactive waste. Oh, it's not going to harm you. But they're not the experts. Like the people who I interview every single weekend when I'm at home, like those are the folks who have, at 15 years old, experienced ovarian cancer. Or they've had multiple cancers, lung cancer, prostate cancer, kidney cancer, et cetera. So those are the experts to me, like people who lived in an area for generations, who know exactly what went on, how it went on, who was told what. It's interesting to note because there's one interview that I recently did where the gentleman who is the second generation of a family who lived in this particular area was talking about getting roads or getting a paved street where he lived. And Lawrence Roos, who is one of the former county executives, back then they called them the supervisors, said to the person who lived on this specific street, you don't pay enough taxes, so you're not going to get a street paved. That was the county executive who said that. And everyone else, they did indeed get streets, but guess what? The streets that they got paved, had dioxin in them.
Yeah,
from Russell Bliss. Interestingly enough, that this area, there's a list registry, hazardous waste registry, that is held within DNR. And when I asked for all of the properties that had the contamination, dioxin contamination from Russell Bliss, this location that I'm talking about was not on the hazardous waste registry in the state of Missouri, period.
Yeah.
So, like, and I don't know if it proves your point or not. This is just what's on my mind. The guy who came in, Russell Bliss, the way that he's described by individuals is he was a boss hog kind of guy. His car didn't have a roof. I don't know how to explain cars, but you go back in the day and he had one of those horns that made these weird loud sounds, and he had a medallion, and they just described him as a boss hog, and he is probably the biggest contaminator in the entire, definitely the entire state, well, next to Monsanto. And then I think he's one of the biggest contaminators in the country as well. But, of course, there are a lot of corporate entities that are out there who also contaminate. So,
well, you know, you're uncovering a lot of evidence of radioactive contamination through your work.
Yeah.
And I would bet you that there will be lawsuits as a result of it.
Well, they've tried to do lawsuits and in several different areas. And there was some entity that already existed that said, hey, we're not going to take your case. So I'm trying to get to a point for the people who've been impacted previously and currently. I'm trying to get to a point where they can sue. And part of this is the EPA. So what I've been uncovering when it comes to the EPA, they have been absolutely negligent. In fact, they really should be investigated. Within the last couple of years, I've asked for an investigation, a congressional investigation of the EPA, and it has not been done, but it should be done. And the number of people in the state of Missouri who have been victims of the EPA is enormous.
Senator from the 7th wants to do an introduction.
Oh, he does? Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, just a minute.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Madam President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Please proceed. Hearing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, on my left and your right, visiting today is Developmental Potential Incorporated, and they have brought some very special constituents of mine. Today is visiting is Amy Cox from Developmental Potential, Britton Rhodes, Michael Holden from Kansas City, Missouri, Mary Kate Christie from Grandview, and Matt Water from KCMO. They are here to advocate on behalf of adults with disabilities, and they did an excellent job explaining their issues and why it's so important that we continue to support them, and I am very glad to have them in the Senate, and I ask the body to make them feel very welcome.
Please welcome the guest of the senator from the 7th. We are pleased to have you at the Capitol today. Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Okay. So anyway, what I was trying to get at was some of the people that you're working with are probably going to end up going to court. This bill is changing the way that we achieve justice in Missouri. And so it's going to affect those people, and I think that it's going to affect them adversely. And so that's important. And I thought you might be thinking about that.
You know, what I have to say is I'm not surprised, right? When I talk to these families, there's one gentleman who I talked to this week, and I asked him the question, how do you, like, survive and get through this? Like, he has 8 children, and I asked him, do you ever wonder which child is going to get sick first? So he is the 3rd generation from this community. There are other families that had 12, 13 children, obviously, or way back in the day. And I could go through, for example, the Butler family, the number of siblings that have died of illnesses. And it's real. Like, you could say, oh, it's their health. You know, that's why they have all these issues. Well, you can't say that about this community because they survived on their vegetation. They had orchards. They had pear trees. They had strawberries. They had blackberries. They had apples. They had all the stuff you needed in one area. So they were self-sustaining. They also had family gardens around their homes, and they killed their own hogs and skinned them or did whatever you do with hogs when you process them. And so, again, when you look at the way of life versus, like, what they're inhaling, what they're ingesting, what they're drinking, when you think about all of the ways that an individual becomes, or a mammal becomes, sick, you're like, you're at ground zero. And the reason why I'm focusing so much on this particular community is because it precedes Bridgeton. It precedes that. They had a landfill. They had a landfill that was on fire, and everybody's sick. And as I said before, there were 2 times of contamination, 2 periods of contamination, in the 1950s as well as the 1970s. And the laws that we had, I mean, it's really fascinating. The laws that we had back then did not prevent a lot of these truckers, a lot of these haulers, from recontaminating certain areas. And I see an inequity. So when you look at the families that were harmed by dioxin in Times Beach, or the families who lived around Frontenac, or the families that lived in other areas, in whiter areas in St. Louis County, they were able to get some type of resolve. But when you look at places like Castle Point, when you look at places such as the community around Greer and Norwood in St. Louis City, or you look at places in unincorporated St. Louis County that are mostly African American, there has been absolutely no resolve. And so when we talk about something like this bill, this House Bill 153, this has been reality for a lot of us anyway, just because of the skin color we have, right? And everybody else is waking up because it's now going to impact someone who's not of color. Like, we've been going through this for a long time, where you're questioned, you're doubted. You know, you may have all the expertise in the world. You may have gone to Oxford, you know, perhaps you've gone to an Ivy League school or something. But when you wear the skin color brown or black, you know, you're treated differently. The knowledge that's in your head is not the same as everyone else who surrounds you. The example that I always use as a person of color is, I can look up into the sky and say the sky is blue. And then the Caucasian folks who are right next to me say, oh no, I don't think the sky is blue. And then they ask, you know, Susie, who's white, hey Susie, do you think the sky is blue? And then Susie says, yes, the sky is blue. And then they don't say, hey, Susie, you're right, the sky is blue. And they forget, hey, Maria said the sky is blue first. But you doubted Maria because Maria is not equal intellectually as Susie is. So we deal with that every single day.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. I think that probably It's true that the same kind of discrimination thing happens with women and elderly people and short people. I mean, I've some seen people. Similar kind of things.
It's unfortunate. And, I do recognize that I don't know what to tell you, Senator. I honestly, yes, it's a bad bill. Absolutely, it's a bad bill. But we've been going through this for years.
Yeah.
One
of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, because I haven't had an opportunity, and that's the landfill. Have you ever been to a landfill that's actively in operation?
Yes.
Where they're burying the trash?
They're doing maintenance on it, so I've been to the Bridgeton landfills multiple times.
Well, they got this big area. Now, years ago, 40, 50 years ago, they weren't nearly as picky about where they put stuff in the landfill as they are today.
That is correct.
And so you had people bringing in dump loads of trash. And then they have this big, giant machine with huge wheels that have spikes on them that roll over all of this stuff and compact it down.
Yes.
You've seen those?
Yes. And I've heard about them in my oral histories as well.
Yeah. And usually there's a lot of paper and plastic bags and everything blowing around. And they bring in all of this stuff and this big, giant machine rolls over it. But it used to be that trucks would come in and they'd have trash, and then other trucks would have, waste material. I mean, they weren't really all selected. They didn't, put all the barrels of oil and junk that they're putting in there, only on one side. It would kind of get mixed in.
Well, it not kind of would. It would get mixed in, and that's the example that I'm talking about that precedes Bridgeton. And you had these haulers, just to be specific. You had B&K Construction hired by the Cotter Corporation, and they had, thousands of tons of barium sulfate that was mixed in with original processed uranium, natural processed uranium. And then they mixed all of that with 39,000 tons of ground soil, of soil, thinking that the soil would water down the elements that had been previously processed. It's not Kool-Aid. We're talking about remnants of an ore, remnants of a rock, and they do not go down, they do not decay more than what they have already done. So the reality is these tons of barium sulfate and raffinate, original uranium processed ore, instead of it being watered down, what happened is that soil was further contaminated. All of that collectively together, about 48,000 tons total, ended up being used and interpreted as clean fill. And portions of that clean fill went to the Bridgeton landfill, used as clean fill, or it was told that it was clean fill. So when people talk about radioactive waste just being in one part of the landfill, well, that's not correct. That is not correct. There are people who worked at this landfill in the 1970s who would say, Maria, once one side of the landfill got filled up, the truck simply went to the other side of the landfill. And if you had these piles, these mounds of contaminated soil, and people don't know that it's contaminated, well, as every single truck is coming in, just dumping the trash for the day from neighborhoods, and then putting on top of some of this soil, 48,000 tons of soil, on top of it, and for people who don't know, the soil is added on top of every delivery of trash at the end of the day or during the day, simply because you don't want the birds to get down into that, and then you also don't want the smell to
right.
go all
so,
over the place.
So you put trash, a thin layer of soil, trash, a thin layer of soil.
Yes.
I mean, and other stuff.
Yes.
And the whole idea, the statement that the radioactive material is all confined to a small area in the landfill.
It's not accurate at all. And so
it's a lie.
It is a lie. And the other thing on top of that is when you look at the way that it was a quarry, it was a rock quarry, and it's a very historic, important one at that, because the limestone that came from this rock quarry ended up building highways, you know, across the United States, which is great. But then you have this huge area that you need to fill in, and that's when it became a landfill. But when you look at the outline of this landfill, where the radioactive waste is said to be, is a very thin layer portion of the landfill, and then it goes down deeper and deeper, ultimately to about 350 feet down, and it migrates. So every single time the very lax, unreliable EPA comes out, if they come out to test, the routine that they go through is a step model. So they're literally stepping 1 foot in front of the other, trying to get some readings. And what they have found over the course of time is that this stuff has migrated. And so anytime you have a torrential rain, which we did in 2015, anytime you have a shifting of the earth, anytime that you have a tornado, all of these elements, these alpha and beta particulates and gamma rays, impact, either by water or air, impact the health of the environment. And that means that people do end up getting sick at some point in time. But what we have found through research is that the migration has gone to other parts of the landfill. Also, if you look at the Attorney General's report, the former Attorney General's report in September of 2015, they found benzene and toluene off-premises of the landfill. They found it in trees and in leaves, and so it has reached the point where it's off-premises. So I look at cases such as a couple of people who worked at the Labor Council in North County, that's right around the corner from the landfill, and there's one who got a brain tumor, there's another one who had pancreatic cancer, and then another one. And the consistency is, one, it would be out in the air a lot. They would be out in the elements, going door to door sometimes, or being on a conference call outside instead of inside. And the commonality would be they use the ice in their soda, or they make their coffee using the water, or tea using the tap water. And the thing about this, it's very important. Uranium, when we're talking about uranium, it is specifically attracted to calcium. So there's a lot of calcium in limestone. We have calcium. It's probably one of the reasons why women get breast cancer multiple times in these communities. Instead of just getting cancer once, they get it multiple times also. There are people who don't just get kidney cancer, they don't just get lung cancer, they don't just get pancreatic cancer or prostate cancer, they get multiple cancers throughout their lifetime. And what's interesting, that this part of the study that I just really enjoy scientifically, because I didn't go to school for this stuff, for medical stuff, I didn't do that, but I'm looking at the population of people who I'm studying. If you are the first generation of people who live there as an adult, And I've said this on the floor before, it takes a longer period of time. You could call it a gestation period, but you can also say that it takes a long period of time for your DNA to mutate. But once it mutates, then everything that happens with people who are typically exposed to radioactive waste contaminants happens. If you are part of the second generation, so your parents grew up in the community or lived in the community, has lived there for 15, 20, 25 years, and then that first generation has a child, that child who is also living in the same environment, it won't take 25 years to realize an illness to happening. It may be 15 years old, because with children, you're totally undeveloped. You know, it takes you a while. I mean, there are kids who are still developing in their teens. And so it's much easier for those kids to get sicker quicker. And I've seen it. You know, I could tell you about a kid who is third generation, who ended up getting leukemia and dying at 15, and then the 15-year-old that I told you about who ended up with ovarian cancer, that individual was third generation as well.
Well, you know, just for your information, I have an amendment to this bill, and the amendment would just ensure that this Daubert process is a paper process and that you don't have to have the expert witness come to court prior to trial to do this. And so it would save a bunch of money. And I've given a copy of this to the senator from Butler, and he's having it kind of vetted as he goes in and out. And we're kind of waiting to see. Oh, okay. Well, but anyway, we're kind of like, that's what we're... what's going on in behind the scenes.
Well, and see, here's the other thing, Senator, with this conversation that we're having, if there's anything that crosses over, if there's anything at all, in the experience that I'm having in my studies, there are people who do not have good intent, who want to know every single story of every single family so that they can strike a preventive measure. And so I'm at the point where I'm not giving it up. You know, I'm not, when I have meetings with these families, I no longer make it public when I do that. I used to do that. But I found in one of the town hall meetings that I had that some of these attorneys ended up showing up so that they can strike a preventive measure. What's interesting is in this specific case that I'm dealing with, you have these attorneys from these huge law firms who are, they're able to afford it. So all of the research that I'm doing, which involves hundreds of boxes, literally, they just went to the Missouri Historical Society and had them all copied and then digitized. And the law offices have it at the cost of, what, $40,000, $70,000. I can't afford that. So I literally go through each one of those boxes, you know, one by one or two at a time so that I can find out the same information that the attorneys have. But it's a good exercise to do. Most people don't enjoy researching. I happen to enjoy researching, but I think getting back to the overlap point I was trying to make, is that a lot of times when these individuals are wanting the experts to come in, it's also a preventive measure for cases that come up in the future, so they know everything in advance, so they know how to defend it in the future.
Well, research is hard, tedious work. But it also can be rewarding.
Yes.
You know, I have a question about the landfill. The landfill, is it still on fire?
Yeah, the one in Bridgeton, yes, it is.
Okay, just a question. Do you actually see smoke coming out the top of it?
No, but you certainly can smell the elements inside of it.
So you have, there's a smell.
And the other indication that you have is 5 years ago, the landfill was real big. There was a peak of the landfill, and because of the fire, it's basically burned all the way down. So that's the other evidence.
Yes. Okay, but so you're telling me that you can smell stuff coming off of it, but you can't see anything.
No, but you can certainly detect it. As I said, you go back to the Attorney General's report from September of 2015, and you have off-site contamination tooling, and I don't pronounce that correctly, benzene. What we're finding right now is ethyl benzene and tetra something else. I've never had to use these words ever before. But now I'm having to understand exactly what these, I guess the characterizations are of certain toxins. And, you know, that's the whole dioxin thing. What I learned recently is, did you hear when the Russell Bliss case came up in the 1980s that all of this contamination came from Verona, Missouri? Did you hear that? Well, there is a special case. There's basically a DNA. You would be able to articulate this much better than I am as a doctor. But basically, there is like a DNA characterization of elements and toxins and all that. So initially, everyone thought the Syntex Corporation, where the Verona dioxin was. It was originally thought that that was the contamination that was in Times Beach and in all of these other areas. But what ended up being the case is when you looked at these characterizations, it's completely consistent with the dioxin from Monsanto. And so Monsanto, I'm reading something right now where even Governor Teasdale was trying to get Monsanto to pay for part of the cleanup. And they refuse to do that. They refuse to analyze this stuff or refuse to accept that their dioxin was the dioxin that killed horses and chickens and hogs and all these other kind of things. But for last night, my staff and I were making a comparison to other contaminated sites with this basically trail of DNA, and found another site that has the exact same characterization that was in Times Beach in another area of my district.
Senator, the thing is that I want to continue this conversation with you, but the senator from the 7th has asked me if I would relinquish the floor to him so that he could carry on another inquiry. I think he may be looking at the clock and thinking that that might be a good time for him.
Okay, so here, let me just make a statement, though, so I don't have to go 15 different places in 5 minutes. If you do want to inquire of me, please text me first and let me know that you want to inquire of me, because there was miscommunication. You're wanted, you're not wanted. They called. I didn't know what was going on, and I lost some time.
Okay, I'll do my best to satisfy that request, Senator.
Okay. I apologize. I didn't know what was going on because
Probably want to talk some more, maybe. We'll see.
Yes, just let me know ahead of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Brett?
Further discussion. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan? Proceed.
So, Senator, you're going to want to be inquiring of the Senator from Barton, is
correct.
That correct?
Yes,
so I wonder if the Senator from Barton is listening. He might head toward the chamber. Okay,
yes,
thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Okay, Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
Or the Senator from the 17th.
Senator from Clay, do you yield? Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'm going to be inquiring of the Senator from Barton here real soon. But
sure. I was actually going to try to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan. So.
Okay. Well,
I understand that I understand what you're doing, trying to get the Senator from Barton up here. So I'm happy to talk to you, and hopefully he will walk through the doors imminently.
Okay. You and I didn't get a chance to talk last night. We were waiting patiently to have a go. And the bill got laid over last night before we got a chance to.
That's right. We were both on the floor for a significant period of time, different times throughout the night, but we did not get to inquire on last night's bill.
Right.
Between the two of us.
Okay, well, I see the senator from Barton is here, so I'm going to go ahead
and inquire. I see that. And
won't be long.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
I'd like to inquire of the senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, do you yield? Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
Senator, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to talk, you know, we've been on this expert witness bill this morning, but as we just heard the Senator from the 14th and the Senator from the 34th talk about landfill issues, and as you know, the Senate has an opportunity to discuss a wide variety of subjects while we're on a particular piece of legislation. And later today, I'm going to be issuing a press release essentially praising the governor for his forward thinking and his executive order in supporting parental leave rights for state employees. I'm also going to be calling on the General Assembly to follow suit, DESE, MoDOT, to have a full gambit of state workers have the same opportunities that the governor has set forth for the executive branch. And I understand that your position on this is different from mine. And before I issue the press release, I wanted to have a conversation about this to talk about your feelings on the parental leave, what do you think the costs are going to be for the state, how you feel about him including partners, not spouses, which opens the door for LGBT members to participate in the 6 and 3 weeks leave. So I just wanted to have, we won't take too long out of respect for the bill sponsor for trying to get this bill passed, but I wanted to at least have this conversation before I do my press release. First off, what's your feelings about what the governor did in terms of announcing through executive order that he's going to provide 6 to 3 weeks for parental leave for members of the executive branch?
I didn't like it.
And you didn't like it because of the policy of...
Well, a number of reasons, and I didn't mean to be short with you, Senator. I mean, I'm happy to talk to visit with you about this. But first of all, just the way it was rolled out, I think there would have been a whole lot more coordination required for anything like this to come forward. I'm not sure yet constitutionally whether we've got some problems or not. We're still trying to look into that and see whether there may even be some constitutional issues here. Certainly we'll have a problem if there are, because I do
what,
think
what would that, the Constitution would be because the executive order, first off, you know, we understand that President Obama had done a similar executive order for federal employees.
Right, 2015, I think, was it? Or
yeah, 2015. And this executive order is not that dissimilar from that.
Right, it's pretty much the same thing as the Obama executive order.
And what? So what constitutional problems do you think it might have?
Well, in terms of the appropriations for it, how that flows, whether in fact the governor does have the authority to extend that kind of a with that kind of a mandate without some kind of legislative involvement, and I don't know yet, because obviously the executive branch is the executive branch, the legislative branch is the legislative branch.
Right.
So there are some things there that would suggest that, well, maybe the authority's there. There's also some questions that I haven't had a chance to research yet since the executive order just came out.
Right.
And I'm not sure I've read every word of the order. I've read most of it, but I haven't done any research on it yet.
Are you concerned that it's the appropriation side? Do you have any idea of what you think it's going to cost for those who he's covered at this point?
I've heard numbers anywhere from $1.5 million to as much as $6 or more million.
It could be up to $6 million to provide this.
Well, and I've heard numbers larger than that, but I'm not sure exactly what was being brought in. One of the problems, and you just pointed it out, is that there's no, now that we've kind of removed definitions of male and female and husband and wife and family, we suddenly have a whole new arena, a legal arena, that has to be considered. And I think most people that look at this, they don't take it into that arena. They just look at it in more the traditional way, is that, okay, well, you're going to have some wives that are pregnant and some husbands that might want to help with the child and so forth. And the idea of primary caregiver, secondary caregiver.
Do you think a husband can be a primary caregiver if he chooses to be?
Well, that's a question, obviously. That's a question that
I'm asking
you. Answered.
I'm asking you if you think that a husband can be a primary caregiver.
What do you mean by primary caregiver?
Well, if you have an LGBT couple and you have two males or two females, in our circumstances, take two males that decide to adopt a child because adoption is included in the, and it said partners, not spouses. So if you have a gay couple who adopt a child and they file for primary care leave for the 6 weeks, do you think that they should be allowed to do that?
You know, that's the whole point. There's so much unknown in this because that's exactly one of the questions that will be raised. And I don't know that the governor's executive order clarifies any of that. I mean, that's a good question. I wish I knew the answer to that.
Right. What do you think the role of the legislature is if this is an executive order for executive branch? Does the governor have to come to us every time he wants to have an edict to deal with HR issues within the executive branch, or do you think that he actually does have the ability to make this decision unilaterally?
I'm not sure. I don't think he certainly doesn't have the decision to make it unilaterally because he doesn't. The legislative employees don't work for the governor, so he absolutely does not.
Well, this
have
doesn't
that
affect. Like, he called on, and I will be joining him this afternoon, calling on the General Assembly to follow suit.
Right.
Auditor's office was the first to make this determination. The governor decided also to extend this. I will be calling on the legislature to do the same this afternoon.
Right. And frankly, it is. I mean, it is fun to give other people's money away, and that's what this is all about. It's saying, look, it's not my money. It's the public's money. It's taxpayers' money. I'd love to give more leave. I'd love to get higher salaries. I'd love to do all this. Now we're not going to see this and higher salaries. I don't think. I think that's one of the things that probably. I don't know that it's expressed, but certainly would be implied, is that this would probably be in lieu of maybe raises for everybody.
Okay.
But because it would, and it would be obviously a much smaller grouping that would benefit from it. Not everyone in the state works for the state would benefit, where everyone would benefit if we could raise the salaries.
Now we
so
talked
that's
about
one of the issues that I don't think has been fully vetted. But I do think that it's. That I know I take that seriously in my office. If I'm considering a staff raise or something, I'm sure my staff would be happier with more money. But it's my constituents' money that I'm deciding whether or not to spend. And so when I look at this, I say, wait a minute, I've got an obligation to the taxpayers of Missouri. Am I treating them right by saying I'm going to give state employees more than they're receiving now for doing the same job, actually doing less job because it would be 6 weeks less work, but we're going to give them the same money. And so I look at all those things, and I have to admit, I don't find this to be a slam dunk issue from where I sit, Senator.
Well, you know, we talk about the low wages for state employees and trying to have a competitive workforce that attracts talent. Don't you see this as being a way, as a benefit to workers, to attract them to state government, that this is something?
I don't know. Senator, look around this room. Look around the room, the people are in this room, and you tell me how many people in this room are going to benefit from this.
Well, I think that if we attract, well, first off, if you're asking me the question, I think that the communities at large benefit from families having time to put that first 6 weeks of nurturing into a newborn. It's very important to establish the bond and the connection between a mother and a child, a father and a child, that will last well into their high school years. And countries like Norway.
You think 6 weeks is adequate for that?
Well, countries like Norway have 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, so why is 6 weeks adequate?
Well, I think
why isn't it a year?
Tell me that.
Why isn't it a year, Senator?
Again, if you're asking me the question, I think that because the federal guidelines were already put in place to establish the 6 and the 3 weeks, that it was a transition that had already been forged, and that was something.
Why does that make it right? I mean, isn't that what you're questioning? Is why?
Well,
is this
I'm,
right?
I'm asking you if you think that the policy itself. There's a couple different unpacking items here. The first one is do you think that the governor has the authority to do this through executive order? Because this is sort of setting a precedent for future actions that I heard a lot of consternation with the Obama administration. Now, I personally think that the governor does have the authority to write this executive order. I personally support his decision in writing it. I support the outcomes of what he is saying. I watched his video. I thought it was very charming for him and his wife to have their child showing and demonstrating that families in their 40s,
you know, want to spend that time with their kids. And so I support him in doing that, but I understand that you don't or may not, and that's where I want to start this discussion, because at the end of the day today, I will be calling on the General Assembly to follow suit, and I want to know where the lines of debate are going to be drawn in terms of what resistance we're going to see from this chamber in order to try to get this done. And when you have identified yourself in opposition to this, I think that this debate that you and I are having right now is going to start the foundation for this discussion to try to make this happen.
Now, how did you know that I had identified myself in opposition to this?
Well, I noticed that there was a highway patrol officer outside your door last night. We were suite mates. So my office is next to yours. And I recognized that our chief executive officer was paying you a visit, and upon further inquiry, I mean, it's not hard to ascertain from fellow colleagues as to who is and who is not in favor of certain positions, and it wasn't difficult, Senator, to figure out that if this applies to LGBT members, that you would probably have an issue with it.
Well, it really has nothing to do with that. That obviously brings a whole element of unknowns into it, and that I had not, that was certainly not my first response. Although I have heard discussions about that, and nobody seems to have any answers about that.
Well, I think it's clear that it does apply.
My first concern, Senator, frankly, was, but wait a minute. Those are my constituents you're telling are going to have to pay these state workers now for 6 weeks that they don't work, that before they were working. And so now these are the same constituents that are saying, why don't we fund transportation and education?
Right, but you're...
They're the same constituents that are saying, why don't we fund more Medicaid, expand Medicaid? Those are the same constituents,
right, but...
and we're saying, well, because we're going to give 6 weeks off medically, we don't know who we're giving it to yet, and we're not sure how we're going to qualify them yet, and so we don't know how big the population is yet, but we're going to do that. But then the same group is saying, but what about transportation for education?
But
I mean, I've heard
same,
you raise that question,
right,
Senator.
And I agree, and those were the discussions, but those same constituents voted for Governor Greitens. And they said, we want you to be governor, and this is a decision.
They voted for me, too, Senator.
They did, which is why you have the ability to oppose the governor's decision. But the governor made a choice. He made an allocation of resources that he feels is going to strengthen state government, that he feels is going to make it more attractive for employees.
But it's also
going to
make state government more expensive.
It's a retention, but that's, he's the governor.
In the governor's speech to the General Assembly, a state of the state speech, he mentioned, as you may recall, that he mentioned the number of employees that we have in Missouri, state employees,
right,
and he compared it to several other states. Do you remember the nature of that comparison?
I remember him pointing that out as an area that he would like to address, but I don't think that these two issues are mutually exclusive.
You remember the direction that was implying?
Refresh my memory.
Well, he was basically saying, if you look at the number of state employees we have in Missouri per capita of population versus a number of other states, we have way more state employees on the payroll that the Missouri taxpayers are paying than a lot of other states. Now, the context of that was, you know, if we were not hiring so many people, we could probably pay the people that were doing the best jobs even more. So I'm looking at that and saying, okay, so how does extending the time that an employee is paid but not working going to help that scenario? How's it going to help that scenario?
Do you not agree that this decision makes state employment more attractive? That it could be used as a recruiting tool?
Senator?
To young families.
Young families, okay. I don't know what the population is of young families in state employment. Do you have that
number?
Well,
I don't have the exact number.
If I look around here, well, these are all in state employees.
I don't have that exact number, but I would suggest that if it's a low-paying job and we're having a difficulty in recruiting, and you can do two things. One, strengthen the community through having more time with parents, with their children, that builds that family bond, which I know you support, and you're also making it more attractive to recruit better employees to that system, then you're improving it on both sides. Yes, there's going to be a cost to it, but that cost is a... I believe, and I haven't spoken with the governor directly about my support for his decision to write this executive order, but I got to believe that you know, looking at it objectively from a social science standpoint, that when you have a chance to do two things, strengthen the community and make your state employees retention better and attract and recruit better employees to it because of that benefit, then the resources you're going to expend on that, which I've heard 1.1 million was the number that I had heard. I hadn't heard the 6 million. That is a win for the dollars that you're getting ready to allocate.
And that's purely speculation. I mean, I could speculate just as much the other direction because until we, I don't know, do you know what states have done this? What states give 6 weeks of family leave?
I think there are four. I know that I think California, New Jersey, maybe Minnesota. We're the fifth state.
How are they doing? I mean, is this made, I don't know. I don't know what impact it's had on their state employees. I know it hasn't impacted a large number of the state employees because not everybody gets 6 weeks of leave because
right.
not everybody has a baby.
Right.
So it's one of those issues where, you know, I don't know that there's it's going to be easy to gather any statistical confirmation that this is a good idea or a bad idea in terms of its social implications. Obviously, you know, right now a mother can take 6 weeks off and take care of her child. She can take it off now. Now it's going to cost her some because some of that is not going to be paid, and so that is a question about family commitment.
And
you're
I
right.
think, and
now,
I think the
I don't
governor
know why anyone would not take the 6 weeks, even if they weren't using it to strengthen their family once it's paid, because there's no loss. The
and
other
I
side
think
is
the governor
commitment.
Said, "I'm willing to have the state share a partial responsibility in providing that opportunity for that community building."
I think that's the message.
Senator.
I missed that. Say that again.
So I think the governor made a determination that he was going to have the state and the taxpayers share in that opportunity, share in the burden of the cost of that opportunity by making this executive order. So he essentially said, I'm the governor of the state. This is going to benefit the communities that I represent. This is going to make it more attractive to be a state employee. This is going to provide better retention for our state employees, the good ones that we have that we want to keep. And I'm going to put some resources behind this beneficial plan.
And I guess, Senator, that I would question whether that would have as much benefit to both hiring and retaining employees as a raise, which was a general across the board improvement in income, and would certainly, I mean, if you took the same amount of money and paid people more, then you're having the same impact on the economy. So the gains there are going to be the same.
Right.
The question is whether this is a special interest application of taxpayer dollars or whether it's a general application.
Senator, you can't call parents special interests.
Sure, you can. There's nothing bad about being a special interest, Senator.
No, but it is. It is the fabric of our society, the family unit.
But when in government we prefer one group over another, it becomes a special interest, negative or positive. There's no moral statement on that. It's simply an observation that this is an interest group that is receiving a benefit that isn't going to everyone. Now if we wanted to offer every state employee an extra 6 weeks of vacation, then it wouldn't be a special interest.
Okay.
Every state employee.
All right. If you want to categorize that. So my last question, and then I'll let you go. And I appreciate you taking the time to discuss this, because I think that you know, we need to have this discussion, and I'm doing it publicly so that way we are able to air out some of the concerns that you and others might have about this. The practical application of how this can happen going forward is the Personnel Advisory Board can make a determination through OA that this is a recommendation for leave for the other departments. They can do it for MoDOT, DESE, for conservation, because those are constitutional commissions. Then they can do it for the General Assembly, but of course we'd have to have the House Accounts Administration Committee and the Senate Administration Committee then support that recommendation and actually put it into effect. That's what I'm going to be calling on later today, is to support the governor's determination and support his executive order and make that happen for everyone who works in state government, not just in the executive branch. If we are successful in convincing the Personnel Advisory Board to make that recommendation, and if the House Accounts Committee and the Senate Administration Committee decide to also enact that, you know, what at that point in time, as the senator from Barton, you know, are you willing to accept?
I'll be a no.
You'll be a no. All right. All right, fair enough, Senator. Well, I hope that we're successful in providing this to the rest of our employees, and I'll be working for that. And I understand where you're at, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about it today.
Senator.
All right, thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. wanted to talk to you a little bit. Kind of been paying attention to the debate, and of course it's a bill that we've heard more than once. I mean, this has been a couple years now. I think it seems like in the past it was, Senators Schmidt and Schaefer who were holding it up in the past, and we've had that discussion before. But you've said something that that I thought was a little different perspective, or at least I never heard it in the debate before, and that was that essentially what we're doing with this bill is telling you as an individual that you cannot put on the defense that you feel is the best.
Or the offense
that you think is the best. And I hadn't really thought of it that way before. I hadn't really looked at it that way before. I think that's a very interesting perspective. And I think you're right about that. I mean, as I think about it, it's one of those times where it's interesting in the Senate because sometimes in the Senate we actually do hear things in debate that affect how we feel about something. And, you know, I was already inclined to, and in the past I've not really supported this legislation, but I think that's a fascinating new take on it. I think it's a great new angle. I mean, that we should be giving our constituents the liberty, as you said, to go to the courts and make whatever case they want to make, and not artificially say, well, we're going to put this standard on who you can put on the stand or whatever. And I think the senator from the first, in a conversation you were having, pointed out that it's really not in your best interest to bring a witness that's less than an expert.
Right. That's the point. There's always the potential for mischief anytime you give the court the ability to decide something about how you get to present to the jury. And it's like we're saying to the court, okay, we want you, court, to sanitize everything that's said to make it absolutely squeaky clean and pure. And when you say that to them, you're ceding to them the power that you should have to put on your own case. And it's up to your opponent to impeach the credibility of your witness.
Right. I mean, that's their job. If you put somebody on the stand who doesn't know what they're talking about, it's your job as the other side to be able to cross-examine them in such a way that it's obvious to everybody that they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. The person that I decide to put on the stand to represent me may not have the impeccable credentials the highest of credentials, but may actually know more about the issue and be able to present that to the jury better than somebody else who did have the impeccable credentials.
Right, because that's ultimately what we're talking about in the founders' wisdom of creating the jury system or giving us the jury system in our form of government. And I think that along the lines of what you were just saying, it was fascinating to me to hear the senator from the 14th talk about her experience as she's going through this nuclear waste exploration investigation in her district, and talking about how, to her, some of the people who hold the most weight aren't Harvard grads. They're not nuclear physicists who have studied fission or fusion. It's the people who have grown up and lived and have the experience to live through that, and that brings them the experience that she feels makes them an expert. And so going to a courtroom situation, it seems to me that those people ought to have an equal chance to persuade a jury that they're an expert as anyone else.
Right, and if my expert doesn't have the impeccable credentials, the other side will say to the jury, by the way, notice that he doesn't have those impeccable credentials that my guy has, therefore mine's more credible, listen to mine, and the jury should agree.
And let them make the decision for themselves.
Three members standing. Senator from Butler, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you put that bill on the informal calendar, please?
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, go to the order of business of announcements.
Announce. The order of business is announcements. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, no further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day.
The Senator from Cole moves the Senate go in recess until 2 p.m. today. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m. today.